It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible with your own personal guide, the Pilgrim, on the 405, Mr. Will Crist.
Welcome to Pilgrim Talks on this beautiful day here in Laguna Beach. The sun is out. It is marvelous, just marvelous. And, you know, walking up and down, driving around, taking a look at the 405, there's a lot of people out there who need to take this whole internet and shape it to their business, or maybe it's shaped their business to the internet, but not everybody knows how to do that. I know there's a lots of do-it-yourself people out there in lots of different places, but not everybody knows how to take the internet and use online software, create web pages, and not everybody has people in their company who are competent at doing that. So what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk with an entrepreneur who is a social media guru, done a lot of work helping CEOs get out of the box that they put themselves into, take a look at the pains that they have, and help them not only spend more money, but make more money through this thing that Tim Berners-Lee has given us, this great gift called the internet. So I want to welcome John Driscoll, who's a popular speaker and consultant for social media marketing all over the country. He's produced over a billion dollars in mortgage production the first years of his business. So we're going to hear from him about what he can do to help CEOs deal with some of the issues that are keeping them up at night. So welcome, John.
Hi, how you doing? Well,
super. So here we are talking on Skype to each other, and we're using the internet, right?
Yes, we are.
So tell me a little bit about what's this $1 billion in mortgage production all about?
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a long story. So, I've been in sales for over 20 years, and I started in the mortgage business and financial business for a long, long time, and back in 2000, I started a mortgage company and grew it to one of the largest mortgage companies in Southern California, and got out in about 2006, which people will say, well, it was really good timing. Well, that was on purpose. And got out in 2006 and followed my passion, which was in technology. I actually really combined technology with my mortgage business, which was a reason why we were successful. But when I got out in 2006, I really wanted to follow what was happening in technology with social media, with applications, and all these things that were coming out, and really work with companies because I felt the frustrations. You know, as a CEO at the time myself, I felt the frustrations of trying to get onto the internet and be successful on the internet, and it was extremely painful. And so I thought, you know, when that was kind of winding down, I said, well, I bet I could work with a lot of companies consulting, and that's kind of where I began, was consulting and developing for companies to help them to understand how to be successful on the internet.
Okay. All right. So tell me a little bit about what you do with companies. Who do you work with? What kinds of issues do they have?
Yeah, I've been on the phone with companies as far as from Disney to Experian, the Red Cross this last week, to UCLA. So we work with various types of businesses and institutions, and we generally will help them starting from design. Now, this is the big dirty secret in the internet, is generally companies say, well, we want to do this, and will you build this for us? And that's really the place where they make the first mistake. And that is that the company knows what it should be doing, and they don't. They don't know what they should be doing, and that's just the honest truth. And I tell, you know, any CEO that I'm meeting with that, you know, I'm not going to just build what you want me to build. I'm going to tell you what I think you should build and work it out based on your budget and what your business is all about so that we can be successful. Because, you know, I say this a lot. If you give me $1 and I don't create $2 from it, I didn't do my job. And it's just that simple. It comes down to return on investment. So you can't just put gobs of money into it and expect to get gobs of money out.
So what do you do with business owners who insist that they know what they want?
Yeah, we just won't work with them. It's just that simple.
That's pretty tough.
Well, you know, we're in a very good situation in the sense that we're not really hurting for business or don't need business. So we get to selectively deal with people that we want to work with, and we want to work with people that we think have a plan to be successful, you know, because I don't want to work with somebody that tells me what to do, and then I do that, and then they're not successful, and then, you know, then that makes me look bad. So the best thing for us is to work on projects that we think will be successful.
So you're willing to take a no?
Absolutely, yeah. We say no a lot.
You say no, and you're also willing to hear a no from somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, not, you know, I don't think everybody's a perfect fit in a relationship. And, you know, if you've been in business any period of time, you know that you find the right relationships. And even clients have to be the right relationship. So we want to find people that really understand, you know, I hear from CEOs all the time, hey, you're the expert. And then they proceed to tell me exactly what they want. And I'm like, I thought I was the expert, you know. Mm-hmm. So I like to work with people really that say, you know, you're the expert. Please explain to me what your line of thinking is. And then, you know, let's do that and let's agree upon something.
So talk to me a little bit about what kinds of issues you are seeing companies have today.
Well, you know, it starts from the question of whether you should do it yourself in-house and whether you shouldn't. And so generally companies will have, you know, what they call an IT department, and that IT person will sometimes say, well, this should be done. And the CEO is relying on that person to know the entire technology world. And that's just not realistic for them to know all that. Generally, they run systems and internal, you know, email and things like that. And that's not the person that should be kind of making the big decisions about your company's direction on technology.
So these are more tacticians working on maintaining systems, extending systems, supporting the systems, making it available to other people, probably doing some training for folks as well.
Sure, yeah. It's an important role in a company. It's just not the role for design. You know, just like my role is very specific as well. My role is design. It's trying to decide what a company should do. Can I program a little bit? Yeah, but I shouldn't probably program your next development job. I should be designing it and having somebody in our office program it that's good at that job. So it's really understanding that people have their specific roles, and not one person really has all the answers.
So tell me, then you would be more strategic, whereas the IT department's probably going to be more tactical.
Yeah, they're tactical, and they have their passions, you know, that they're seeking, which are important. But you need to have a strategic partner, somebody who understands the way a company runs and why a company spends money and what it wants to get out of it. And generally, that person just doesn't understand that. And so you're putting, you know, what a lot of CEOs have done is they put that person in a bad position. Mm-hmm. By asking them those questions and not going to, you know, a consultant or somebody who does that every day that understands what they're
sounds a little to me like the CEO who says to the best salesman, I want you to be the sales manager. Now go out there and tell me what I should be doing to support my salespeople. And this great tactician is now asked to be in a strategy situation to develop people rather than to sell, and he ain't got a clue.
That's so true. How many times have you seen you take your best salesperson and you put them in a management role, and they're really not wired that way? You know, they're wired to be on their own and be a lone ranger and kind of do that job, and they're generally not a great sales manager. So it's so true, and we do this all the time in companies. You know, you need to find somebody's real skill and put them in the right position and hopefully keep them there, right? That's what we all hope to do.
Well, and find what they really want to do, right?
Yeah.
And then help them to get to where they want to go. Give them the tools, help them to learn how to do what they want to do. If somebody wants to do something, I mean, my belief is that if somebody in the world is doing something, anybody else in the world can do it if they have two things. One is passion, an overweening desire to do it. I mean, nothing is going to stop me from doing this. The second thing they need to have is somebody who either has already done it or knows how to do it to teach them. Mm-hmm. If they have those two things, would you agree with me that they could do literally anything?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to have passion for it. I mean, that's why, you know, I got out of what I was doing before. and follow technology. You know, I had a lot of success in the mortgage field, but I wasn't passionate about financial things. Mm-hmm. You know, I was good at sales. I was good at creating a sales system and marketing, but I wasn't passionate about that. And you know, when I left that, that was a big decision, you know, going to my wife and my two kids at the time and say, listen, daddy's been doing this for 20 years, but he's going to kind of switch it up a bit. And so, yeah, that was a big decision, but I am so happy. And now my wife is very, very happy because she sees the difference in my life that I'm passionate about technology. And I certainly love sales, but working with those two together is really, you know, what drives me every day.
It's very interesting to me that the people that I have the most fun working with in my sales training, sales management training business are the people who are passionate about what they're doing.
Yeah, it starts from there. I mean, you know, I started in sales when I was 19 years old and I'm 41 now. I mean, how do you keep doing that for so many years and still wake up every day feeling like you just started? You just can't do that if you hate what you do. You know, I enjoy the people I meet. I enjoy all the things that come with that. And that's what drives you. Yeah. So if you don't have passion, I always tell people, if you're not passionate about it, you should quit and find something else to do.
Right. Find your passion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Find your passion. And you know, what's been interesting to me is that I've been passionate about getting to people through, you know, in sales and sales management. I mean, it's really a mask. Sales and sales management, customer service training, those kinds of things. To me, those are ways of a company engaging me to help them, mm-hmm. To help them to improve the way that they're dealing with their employees and to help their salespeople to improve the way they're dealing with their prospects and customers.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's infectious. When you love doing what you do, the people that you're selling to can sense that. You know, it's funny. I was just at the store the other day, and somebody, this girl walked up to me and tried to sell me chocolate like they always do when you walk out.
Right.
And she says, you know, would you like to buy some chocolate? And I almost stopped her at that moment because I was kind of busy, so I didn't. But I was going to say, you know, who would buy chocolate from you? Mm-hmm. You don't even look like you like chocolate.
Right.
Or you certainly don't like selling chocolate.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
And so just the way she asked that question was, you know, clearly why she was obviously very discouraged at the process,
well,
you know.
You know, it's a couple of simple things to me for her. I mean, because obviously if, you know, what you're saying is true, which I assume it is, she wasn't comfortable. She didn't like it.
No.
All right. No. So if she really wanted to, if she said, I want to sell chocolate because I've got a bigger goal. I mean, I don't want to sell chocolate in my life, but,
sure.
But you know, I want to go to college. I want to take care of my child. But this is a route for me to accomplish what I want. So the more chocolate I sell, the easier it is for me to reach my goal.
Right. Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Will, because when in 2004, 2005, when I had the mortgage company, I had 120 employees. My goal was to be a consultant by the time I was 40. And because of the market, the way it went, I actually got there a lot earlier than I wanted to. But that was my goal. I said, I'll keep doing this because I know this is my goal to get to be a consultant and to do what I really want to do. And it kept me kind of going. I knew I couldn't do it forever. But I knew I could do it for a little bit to get to my goal.
Yeah. And so if you understand that alignment, that if I sell more chocolate, I'll get to my goal.
Yep.
Now, I want to sell chocolate. And the next step is there a way that I could sell it better? Is there a way that I would be more comfortable selling it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, to me, once we help her to understand how she's going to accomplish her goals, then we can use that same mindset to help her sell better. Because selling, really, to me, it's engaging somebody, helping them to discover whether or not they have a need, desire, hope for anything that I can supply them with.
Yep.
And then helping them through that crevasse of, I don't trust you, to, this looks like a reasonable thing. I want to make a decision here.
Yeah.
And so if she were able to come to you and to say, I got a question for you. Do you like chocolate?
Yeah, Yeah, that's great. That's
When's the last time you had any chocolate? Do you know anything about our chocolate? Have you ever tried any of our chocolate? Would you like to try a piece of chocolate?
Yeah.
I mean, that engagement and then beginning to discover mutually whether there's any interest here, any desire.
Yeah.
If you're like me, I'd be putty in her hands at that point.
Well, yeah, I would. See, what the funny thing is the only candy I eat is chocolate. So I love chocolate.
Yeah.
Which certainly didn't make me feel like I wanted to have some.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it really boils down to the way you ask questions. And if you feel like what you offer and what you do is more of a mission to improve other people's lives, then you're going to be very passionate about what you're doing and people are going to want to buy your product. But it's not like they're buying your product. You're out there improving people's lives. Like right now, I know the pain of a CEO. I know I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars feeling the pain of software development with my company. And so now I know I can go in and work with companies and help them to efficiently spend that money so that it actually improves their company. And they can go back to their investors and say, look, I made this decision. It was the right decision. And, you know, whether they give us credit or not, we had something to do with that.
Yeah. And once you get that passion running,
mm-hmm.
then the next thing to me, now this is kind of where we started the conversation. The next thing to me is that CEO willing to admit that number one, he's got the passion, the desire to climb that mountain, to achieve that goal. And number two, he doesn't have the answer.
Yeah, and that really boils down to people we work with or not. It's tough. When you're in a CEO position, you're spending your time building other people's confidence that you have all the answers, and then you have to also have the humility to know you don't have all the answers.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of that. It's a real, you know, paradox that you're living all the time, because you want everybody to have confidence in you because they're having to trust you as their leader, but at the same time, You need to show them that you're smart enough to go out and ask the right people to help you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I know that we have an absolute passion for sales training, sales management training, customer service training, helping people to, you know, improve the quality of communications and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have that. And for years, I've asked the question, and I know we're very good at it, right? I know that the Sandler system works very well.
No question.
All right?
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, why isn't there a line out front?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's because, well, the problem with sales is that I believe, you know, you have to be passionate. You have to be skilled, which is what you guys do is build skills in people, but you also have to kind of be born to do it a bit. You have to have some sort of ability to have a conversation with someone, and some people are really built for that and some people aren't. So it's like sports or anything else. I love golf and I love playing golf, but I have no chance really to go professional because I really wasn't born to do it. And I've seen people who are born to do it and I'm not that person. You know, and so I feel like sometimes in sales, there's that element too. Is some people may, you know, you may disagree with me on this, Will. I don't know, but I think you somewhat have to be kind of driven and skilled, or not skilled, but gifted in it a bit too.
All right. So here's what I would challenge you with.
Okay.
All right. So number one, I have to really want to.
Yes.
Agree with that.
I agree with that.
All right. And number two, I have to find somebody who knows how to do it. I just don't think there's anybody who does anything automatically.
No question.
All right.
You have to be skilled. You have to do it.
Now, there may be, I mean, we got the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
There may be some people who are who have fewer obstacles in the way, right?
Yeah.
There may be people who have issues in their own head that tell them they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some physical issues. I mean, you know, think about the Olympics. I mean, there's physical things that people have to deal with.
Yeah, no question.
Now, I believe that anybody who really wants to and is willing to learn and find somebody who's successful at it can do that.
Yeah, no question. You might not be the gold medalist, but yes, you can be successful at it. In using the sports analogy, you know, you've seen people overcome odds. There's no question. Mm-hmm. People have, for example, you know, football is a big thing right now. Wes Welker is one of the top receivers in the league, and this guy has absolutely no reason to be as successful as he is. He doesn't have the body for it. He doesn't have anything that says, you know, he should be a successful wide receiver, but he's one of the most successful ones.
Right.
And, you know, they barely offered him any scholarships when he got out of high school because people looked at him and said, you're not a wide receiver, but he wanted to. He wanted to be a wide receiver. He wanted to, and he worked harder than everybody else. I do always say that too. You know, I always look at someone in a position and I always say, well, if I'm willing to outwork them, then I can beat them.
All right. I think that's important. That's the passion, right? Passion results in that outworking. So I think there's a role there with him that sometimes goes unspoken. He had to have some outstanding coaching.
Yes.
That coaching, I mean, what we've found coaching means for us is it means techniques, absolutely. You know, what's it mean? How do I be a wide receiver? That's important. Behaviors, you got to practice, you got to do this, you got to follow the plays, memorize it. Behaviors. And then the other is that attitude and belief stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So attitude, belief, behaviors, and techniques, BAT. That's what a coach does.
Yep.
And to me, that's what you do, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You do that with CEOs.
Yeah, it really is no different. I mean, you know, it boils down to it. That's the difference we make, and that's the difference you make every day, is that you're going to someone and you're saying, listen, I'm willing to teach you the way you should be doing this properly. And if you apply these principles, you will have success. Mm-hmm. And that's true in just about any facet of life. You know, if you want to have a better marriage, go learn some principles how to have a better marriage. You know, if you want to be successful at business, you know, I'm absolutely addicted to listening to books in my car.
Yes.
When I'm driving around.
Yeah.
I don't know how many books I go through a year, but I go through quite a few. And some I've heard some of the content before, but it's always good to rehear it. And it's good to do that. And the more you learn, the more you look back at certain things that have happened and apply them to your everyday, you know, what you're going through and maybe what you're coaching someone else through.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's so important to be. You know, I've had good coaches in my life that have absolutely made huge impacts on me.
Well, and now, couldn't we say that is true for life? That those two things are absolutely essential. Number one, having a passion, identifying what we're passionate about. The kind of it may not be my job, but my job may be the vehicle, the path toward fulfilling my passion.
Yes.
I mean, for me, there's things that I want to do in this world through resources, by giving money to support certain causes, right?
Yes.
My goal is to have a big chunk of money to give away.
Yeah.
Not willy-nilly, but strategically to support the things that I believe are important. Now, that means that in order to do that, I got to work really hard, smart. I got to be doing some things that are going to take me out of my comfort zone.
Yep.
I may not find that what I really want to be doing, but I do that in order to accomplish the things I really want to accomplish. The second thing is, when I get out of my comfort zone, what I'm doing is getting out of my scripts. I'm getting out of my automatic behavior patterns. I'm getting out of that place where, you know, I'm on auto drive. And I'm getting into a place that's going to be new, because in order to get those different results, I'm going to have to be doing different behaviors that are not familiar to me. And boy, that's got to be that coach. I mean, I was watching the girls last night, the girls. I guess they are girls, aren't they? The American gymnasts are girls.
Yes, yes. Right?
I was watching them, and their coaches were all around.
Sure.
I mean, here's the top of their game, and the coaches are still there supporting them, reinforcing them, probably giving them techniques and all that. Those two things, the passion and the coaching, I mean, those things are essential, but that's what you do, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you have to help. I don't believe you can just tell someone, and I've learned this. I thought when I got into consulting, it was so funny. I thought, oh, when you're a consultant and you have success behind you, people just listen to you. And I was, completely taken back by the fact that nobody listened to me the way I thought that they were going to when I became a consultant. So what I learned is you really become a teacher to companies in saying, you know, this is the way things should be done, and this is how this works. Because when they have the knowledge and understanding of what it is that you're trying to do, they follow in suit. They follow in behind the leadership. You know, they need to understand what it is that they're trying to do. And when they have that understanding, then they follow in behind you. But without that, they don't. And so you absolutely have to be a coach. You know, I try not to call myself a salesperson, but let's be honest, that's what I do. Other than that, I mean, I would say I'm more of a coach or, you know, production manager. I mean, we use all the kinds of words to try to get away from sales, but essentially it's all the same thing, but it's more of describing how you should be selling.
All right. So let's stop there for a moment. Let's take a break here and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about what this whole notion of salesperson as coach might mean. So we'll be right back after we hear a word from our sponsors.
I'm Al Strauss with Sandler Training. Talk to you about rule number 38. The problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem. When people have heard this rule and thought about it a bit, if they've been in sales for more than a few months, they almost always say, well, that's obvious. I've had lots and lots of prospects that told me what they wanted, I showed them what they wanted, and they didn't buy it. So it seems that it would be obvious. The problem is, most folks don't understand it, and you get in the middle of the conversation, and here's a prospect who's interested in something, you've got the something, and you just show up. And what you really need to learn how to do is ask a bunch more questions, because frankly, in most cases, the prospect doesn't even understand what the real problem is. And so if you ask three or four more questions about what they claim they need or are looking for or want, you're going to discover that it morphs, it changes, sometimes dramatically. What they end up needing is perhaps even diametrically opposed to what they originally said they were looking for. So ask the questions, don't take the first thing they give you, dive down into the real issues, and you're going to have yourself a much better day selling to this prospect.
So welcome back to Pilgrim Talks. We've been interviewing John Driscoll, who is just this brilliant social media guru, entrepreneur, speaker, and coach to the CEOs who have issues that are going to be solved by competent IT implementation, competent software, online software, or other kind of software implementation. And we've been talking about what it means to help people who have a passion, who have a mountaintop that they want to get to, and may or may not know how to get there. So, sure. So John, let's talk a little bit more about what the role of the salesperson is in this endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think that the role of the salesperson is?
The real trap of a salesperson is to be kind of haphazard about your process. I think, you know, the older I get, the more experienced I get in sales and working with clients that are spending a lot of money versus, you know, clients spending a little bit of money. But if you're working with a client that's going to spend a lot of money, you have to have a very distinct process by walking them through. And it's much like a coaching process in the sense that you have to tell them, we're going to have these four stages of this relationship or these five stages, however you break it down. You need to be able to explain to them what it is that you're trying to do. You need to do that and keep reminding them what you're doing. And so I think that that's something that's made us very different, you know, than the average development company or software company, is that we have that kind of a process. You know, we have a professional sales process to walk CEOs through, you know, the phases of development, mm-hmm. and continue to communicate with them through that so that they know how it's going and you know, understand the progress. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It's really, I think the Sandler system, which I think is what you teach, is it talks about that. It talks about breaking up the process and selling a client something smaller up front to gain confidence and then taking them to a level of the big thing that they're probably trying to buy. And we do that very same thing. You know, I'm explaining to you the whole process of selling design as opposed to selling development.
Right.
That's what we do. You know, a client comes to us and says, hey, John, we're looking to build an iPhone application, right? Well, we say, well, what do you want to build? Well, they don't know.
Right.
So we say, well, why don't you just have us architect it? You know, I was talking to UCLA just a couple weeks ago, and I said, don't hire us to develop for you. And they said, what? I said, don't hire us to develop for you. I said, hire us to architect your process. And if you're satisfied with that, then maybe you'll want to hire us to develop. You know, so I'm actually taking the smaller sale up front, but I'm doing that so that I can have a better relationship with them for the long haul.
Well, you know, one technique we call a monkey's paw.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Selling something small to help somebody. Let's go back a little bit further as a strategic coach.
And okay.
Let me explore this, because I'll bet you do this. And maybe I can give you some words for it.
Okay.
When you come in, when you say, don't hire us to develop for you, mm-hmm. is the question that you're asking, what is your passion? What are you trying to do? What do you want to do?
Yeah. One of the questions, you know, we like to ask them is, what are you really hoping to get out of this relationship?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we want to set their expectations. You know, you need to understand their expectations and then set them correctly. You know, asking them that question is a big question, you know, and you're, it's really more of a conversation piece than anything.
Yeah, but very few people want a piece of software, right?
No, nobody wants that.
Nobody wants the end result of it.
Yeah.
All right, so jumping and getting really clear, what is the result that you want from this?
Absolutely.
Now that's going to my way of thinking, that's going to come from either a pain that I'm trying to get rid of.
Yep.
All right, so, and that really, I think, is the most powerful, is the pain that I'm trying to get rid of, or some desired gain, some result that I want. Either
yep.
way, that's what I want.
Yeah, it's so true, because they... No CEO I've ever met really wants to be on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But they're being told by their board or their people that they need to be on the internet or social media. You know, they're like, nobody wants to be on Facebook as a company, but they know they need to be on Facebook in order to be relevant. And so that's generally the pain they're feeling, is that they're constantly being told that they need to do this and they don't know how to do it. They don't know what they should do. They don't even know why they should do it, other than somebody keeps telling them that they need to do this.
Well, have you read Anthony Ferris's book, you know, The 4-Hour Workweek?
I've heard of it. I have not read it.
Well, and so what he's doing is breaking through the paradigms and asking,
yep.
what is it that you want, and breaking through the, you don't, you know, who told you you had to be sitting in front of a desk 8 to 5 every day?
Yeah.
I mean,
by the way, I don't have a desk.
Well, okay, good. So you know, who said that you had to do that in order
yeah.
to get what you want? And so what he helps yeah. people do as a coach, I mean, his strategic way of doing it, is let's get clear about what you want. And
yeah.
once we know what you want, then let's design the way to get there. And, well, first of all, I think there's three steps to it. One is, what do you want, right? And then the next step is, where are you now? You ask that, I'll bet. What have you tried to do? Where are you now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, understand where they're at now. You know, you talk about putting them, you know, helping them walk through the pain. You know, we asked a question the other day to a client. We said, you know, how is the process going right now? You know, they're in the middle of development. And it's funny, the software company was one of the software companies was sitting across from the table. And she said right in front of them, she says, this is like a five-car pileup. And I said, well, I think I reached her pain.
Right.
But I said, you know, I said to her, I said, explain to me what you mean by that. You know, so instead of just moving on, I want to let her sit in it a little bit.
Well, yeah, because that's the motivation.
Yeah, she needs to feel it. People, I think, love counseling, going to counselors, because they like to feel their pain a little bit. It helps them to be in touch with what's really going on in reality. So it's important for a CEO to feel the reality, what's mm-hmm. going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to talk to them about their pain a little bit. It helps me to understand where they're coming from and what it is they're really looking to get out of the relationship.
Yeah, so number one is, where do you want to go? What's the and is there enough passion there to get you there? Is it realistic? I mean, do you believe you can do it? Where do you want to go? Number two, where are you now? Let's talk about budget. Let's talk about process. Let's talk about resources. Let's talk about where you are right now and what's happening right now. And is there a big difference between where you want to be and where you are now?
Yeah, I talk to them even about that issues because a lot of times they've lost so much faith in the process. I always ask them, do you have enough faith to get to the end still?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
You know, do you have enough faith in what I'm telling you now that you know, can you still believe? Is it possible?
Yeah.
Because if they don't believe, they're not going to spend money on it.
Well, in my experience, it was almost a laughing stock about, you know, implementations of Oracle.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
All these people put all this money and took all this time to implement Oracle's solutions, and most of them, they never even got to the place to turn on the switch.
Yeah.
I mean, what a downer. I mean, what kind of a tax on the faith that we'll ever get there is that going to leave? And so finding out, you know, are you willing to walk this path to get all the way to the top of that mountaintop? Because it's not going to be easy.
Well, it's so funny you bring that up, Will, because our process that we employ is very much designed around that philosophy of what you're saying is because in development, developing a piece of software is a very, very big thing to do. There's thousands and thousands of lines of code. You know, there's graphics. There's all these things that you're trying to put together. It's not much smaller than building a house. You know, there's a lot involved. And the problem with the way software was developed a while ago is that generally there was the start and then the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And that was too long of a process for people. Too much money to spend. So what we generally try to advise companies to do is build something smaller first and then build onto it. You know, I like to give them the example. The iPod was a very small thing that only played songs. That's all it did. You couldn't even buy music. It just put your songs from your CDs onto a player and fit in your pocket. It was as simple as that. But that concept came all the way to the iPhone, and I wouldn't even consider the iPhone a different product. It was really an upgrade of the iPod.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was. It, you know, and slower development through time got the user to buy in, you know, to record numbers. And so that's the situation that we try to develop through is let's build, instead of building something really, you know, we say instead of building something half-assed, let's build a half a product. So let's dial down the product, and then we can have a schedule of development upgrades following the launch. Let's launch sooner with something smaller and build on to it as we go. We'll learn through that process. We'll learn what people like about it or don't like about it. We'll learn so much. We won't waste all kinds of money just building what we thought some utopian product. And that's the problem with development. And it really does help a customer to understand. So we explain that, you know, and that's come through us understanding people's pain.
Well, isn't that also kind of like going out onto a football field and saying we want to win the game?
Yeah.
We lose a couple of plays, and so we just kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
And then we look up at the end of the game and say, well, I told you so.
Yeah.
So there's something about, in that process, there's something about mutual accountability. So would that apply to the steps that you take? Are there places of mutual accountability that you have with your clients?
Oh, no question. Yeah, we never, after we follow a meeting, the first thing we do is to set another meeting. And so the design team is the only team, well, the only team members a client of ours ever sees is the design team. Generally, all the other people are kind of in the background doing their job, but the design team, their job is to understand the needs of the client and to build that very thing. We always are constantly meeting with them to understand where they're at and come back with a piece of design to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. Because we have to, a lot of times we're trying to understand every facet of a company. So there's a lot to know. So yeah, so that the mutual accountability is having regular meetings to make sure we're on the right path, that we're doing what we said we were going to do. It's important because we need to make sure that they keep their energy up for the project.
Well, let me share with you something that I say to my clients.
Mm-hmm.
When it looks like they're getting ready to ask me to sign an agreement with them, when they're getting ready to ask me to go to work with them,
mm-hmm.
then what I say to the CEO or to the senior management that's with me, the decision makers, I say to them, look, I got three things that I really need to tell you that have to happen if I'm decide to work with you. I need to know three things. And they're kind of tough. Is it okay if I share them with you? And they say, sure. I say, number one, I need to know that you are going to do what you say you're going to do. Now, this doesn't mean that once we say we're going to do something, it's in concrete, never can be changed. It means that if something changes, you're going to call me and you're going to let me know. You're going to send me an email,
yeah.
Tweet me. I don't care.
Sure.
You're going to tell me that you've changed your mind about what we're doing. But other than that, if I show up, you're going to show up. Other than that, you've got to do what you say you're going to do. Is that going to be a problem? And, you know, ferrets it out. Number two.
Sure.
Number two. Mr. CEO, you got to play. I can't go do this alone. You got to know what's going on. Now, if this is training, you got to understand the system and support it. You don't have to be there every time the training room door opens, but you got to be there in spirit, because you're going to have people who we're going to invite to leave their comfort zones. They're going to be uncomfortable. There are going to be times when they're going to come into you and say, this is not working. I don't want to walk up that hill anymore. I'm tired of this. It's not. And I need you to be strong, because you know where we're going, how we're getting there, and you got confidence in it. So you got to play. Is that going to be a problem? And they say, no. Good.
Yeah.
But here comes the tough part. Now, I don't even like to talk about this, but I got to. If there should be a time when I have to come in and tell you that you are the problem, I want you to promise me that you will listen to me completely before you throw me out. And I generally get that kind of laughter, but
sure.
The reality is that there very often will be a time when they think this is not working.
Yeah.
And sometimes it may be because of what they're doing, and I need to tell them that. And
yeah.
I have to have that up front. And that does happen fairly regularly with my clients, as we're helping them to change the culture of their company, because that culture does come from where they are.
Yeah, I mean, very often it comes from the top. It's a leadership issue, you know. And, you know, maybe they're not listening to people that are trying to speak to them, or they just, you know, have a bad plan, you know.
Or maybe they're trying to force people to do things that people don't want to do or don't believe in.
you know, and I would say it's so funny because I think culturally we used to work that way. You know, we used to work in an environment where people, where their paycheck was enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just said, I work hard. People can yell at me all day. As long as I get a paycheck and I go home and I get a retirement, I'm good.
Yeah.
But today is very different. Today, you have to motivate this generation. You have to make them want to do the work that they're doing. People are often seeking a passion, not just job. And I think it's a good change, but it's often very challenging from a leadership standpoint. Sometimes in our job, we're trying to get the culture of the company to back the project. A lot of times I might be in a meeting with all the staff to explain to them what we're doing. You know, really, that's a job a CEO probably would have a hard time doing. So, you know, but it's good because you get everybody behind the project. Everybody's excited about it. And but if you lead that way, I think you get better results.
Absolutely. It'd be going to be a lot more effective. And there's one thing that I would tweak with what you said when you said you got to get them to want to. What I would suggest is what the CEO, as the coach, as the leader, does is finds out who wants to go with him.
Yeah, that's very true.
And maybe to help them align what they are being asked to do with where they want to be eventually.
Yep.
And that does take time.
Yeah, it's not something that can happen overnight. You got to be careful. You know, people sometimes come in and just want a clean house, you know.
Yeah, it's not company. A memo. It doesn't come out of a memo. This is what we're going to do next week. Or tell me what your goals are. It's a process of developing that team. And I mean, I keep going back to Phil Jackson. I mean, he did not develop that team overnight.
No, not at all.
But he was clearly developing a team.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it takes time. You got to get the right players. As Book Good to Great says, you got to get the right people in the right on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And
in the right seat.
In the right seat, yeah, absolutely. And then as a leader, you've got to show them outside the window what it could look like, what the view is like, and keep explaining it to them.
Yeah.
You know, they'll forget. Yeah. They'll forget.
And the right people on the bus are going to know how to do what they're doing, and they're also going to want to go where that bus is going.
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing. You know, I've got an associate that's been with me a long time since my mortgage days. Seeing, you know, like his work ethic now as opposed to 5 years ago is so drastically different. When I see, you know, some of the time he's putting in his own time, you know, he's putting in his own time to be successful because he is very passionate about this,
mm-hmm.
what we're doing, and he's often driving me now. And it's funny to see him grow in that respect, and that it's affected every part of his life too. To see that, it's exciting because it really is. When you get people in that mindset, it's so much more fun to come to work, and it should be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that you know, that kind of relationship to me is very freeing for leaders in business when you can help them to see the possibilities that are there. Well, this has been wonderful, great insights. I really enjoyed this, John. If people wanted to continue this conversation, how would they get in touch with you?
They could email me at John, J-O-H-N, at phdlabs.com. Or they can go to Facebook /phdlabs and catch me there.
Now, where are you physically located?
We're in Ontario, California.
Uh-huh.
So, Southern California. Yeah, a lot of industry out here, so they keep us pretty busy.
Who would you like to talk to?
You know, I would say CEOs are my main clients. Companies that are looking for direction, or startups. We love startups too because it's fun when you get to start with a blank sheet of paper. But either of those, you know, we work with just all kinds of companies that are trying to build a presence on the internet or trying to build a great new tool on a mobile phone or something like that. And we've been able to take those companies and really drive their success. And it's a great deal of fun.
That's wonderful. Well, we really appreciate you taking time to be with us today. And these insights, I think, are inspirational. And I do think it is the way business is today. These are the businesses that are thriving, that are doing the kind of things that you're talking about, not only in software development, but in developing people and how they move forward.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. This has been a really fun thing.
Well, I appreciate it.
Excellent. So here we have one of the stars of Southern California contributing to how management is moving forward in this particular area of software development, business solutions, business processes, and things like that. We have some wonderful ideas here, and I can tell you from being around different parts of the country, we are blessed. We have some wonderful talent here, and we have some insights that are not always replicated in other parts of the country, but people will learn from it. So it's wonderful to be here along the 405, stretches all the way out. Along the 405 could be all the way out through California and beyond. So it's wonderful to be with you. I look forward to being with you next week on Pilgrim Talks and the Pilgrim on the 405. If you have some ideas, some people that you think would be good to be on the show, give me a call. I'm 949-355-6013. You can get me an email address. It's very difficult now. You ready? It's willchrist@willchrist.com. You can also hear our archives at pilgrimonthe405.podbean.com. It's been great to be with you. Look forward to being with you again next week with Pilgrim Talks, the Pilgrim on the 405.
You've been listening to one show that takes you where others won't, out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal guide, The Pilgrim on the 405.